Hello there, and thanks for joining me in the podcast today. Politics and some of the activity that's going on in our country today that alerts us all to the changes that we could be seeing and experiencing, or we would resist those changes and live more consistently with what life has been in America. Okay, three things come to mind, and three things I'd like to share with you that kind of puts into perspective what's going on in the world today. We hear about all the election results. We hear about the conflicts going on with school boards and the school parents of kids and teachers. And we have all this kind of upheaval going on across the country. All the talk about the critical race theory. Let's put this into perspective by these three issues that are my own personal experience. Now, when the Loudoun County in Virginia had the upheaval, they had a male student that would go into the female locker room and abused and molested a female student. So the school didn't do anything about it except transfer the kid to another school, and he repeated the same behavior in another school. Now, here's the deal about all that. In the area of children, we have a law that says that if you become aware of child abuse, you're supposed to call Child Protective Services or the local police department or the local sheriff's department. Law enforcement, in other words. So in other words, we had this school system, and they became aware that that student molested another student, female student, and they should have immediately called CPS and the sheriff and reported this event. The principal did not do it. The superintendent did not do it. The teachers did not do it. Nobody reported this fact to authorities. Now, they're in violation of the child abuse reporting law by virtue of not reporting this when they had evidence that, in fact, it did occur. It wasn't in doubt. There was no doubt about it. They knew about it, and it was very clear. So it wasn't one of these things that you equivocate on, but it was very definitely an event that had taken place in their school. They are, by law, mandated to report that kid and that event to law enforcement, and they did not. So they're in violation of that. So I waited to hear if on the news there was any action of that nature. If any of the teachers or principal or superintendent had been contacted by law enforcement and charged with the failure to report child abuse. There has been no such information forthcoming. So as of today, my understanding is it was not reported to law enforcement. Law enforcement knows about it, but did not charge any of the teachers, principal, or superintendent with the failure to report. So I wrote a letter. I wrote a letter to the sheriff department of that particular county and reminded them that there is this child abuse reporting law that needed to be honored, and they should immediately look into this event and investigate it and charge any teacher, principal, or superintendent with a failure to report. I have heard nothing in return. No letter in return. And to my knowledge in the news, no action has been taken. So why? Why is the sheriff's department of that particular county defending the teachers and not the parents, not the child that was abused? Why are they letting this go? Well, you answer that one. Okay, that's one thing. Now here's another one. I had a lady come into my office a couple months ago. She has two children. One is in the fourth grade and one's in the third grade. The fourth grader proceeded to tell the mother, my patient, about what happened in school that particular day. You know how it is. Kids come home from school. You have to ask the kids how they go to school. They tell me what took place. Well, anyway, that conversation took place, as it does almost every day in that particular home. The mother reported that the child stated this, that the lesson today in school was that they divided the school classroom into two halves, or into half. One half went to the one side of the room, and the other half went to the other side of the room. One half was told that they were the oppressors, and that they were white, and they were to oppress. They were to believe that they represented a population of our society that oppressed other people. The other half of the room was told that they were the oppressed, and that they were black, and that they were then to understand what it was like to live in a world, live in a community, go to a school, be in a community where white people are the oppressors and the black people are the oppressed, and that they are divided in half. they are split, and that they were told that the white oppressors were bad people, and they were doing wrong, and that they were behaving wrong by virtue of being white, and because of that, they were the oppressors. Well, when the kid came home and told the mother about this story, she hit the ceiling. Now, she didn't know what to do. She happened to come to therapy about a day later and hadn't done anything yet, but brought it to my attention, and we discussed it at great length. She went home with a course of action to undertake, to go to the school and stop that kind of behavior. That's critical race theory, okay? That's what that is. That's critical race theory being taught to fourth graders in Central California. Now, that mother then went to school and raised Cain. Now, what happened after that, I don't know. But I know that that mother took action, and I lauded her for that because she needed to take action because this was offensive. First of all, it was offensive because it violated the way that she was raised. It violated the way that she was raising her children in the home, and it violated the value system of that particular family. So she was upset. She was mad that that school would be teaching critical race theory to fourth graders in a very vivid way. If you're white, you are the oppressor. You cause pain. You limit. You subjugate. You overpower the black people who are the oppressed. And that's not history. That is part of history. That did happen. But that's not the pattern of history. Now here's a third event that took place. And it's important for you to understand this and just put it in perspective. All the schools that are in upheaval, parents trying to have a voice, parents trying to talk to the principal, parents trying to talk to teachers, parents trying to talk to the superintendent, trying to have an influence on what the children are taught and not taught, and how they're managed in the school, and what's taking place in the school, not only in Virginia, but this is happening across the country. And parents are experiencing roadblocks. They're not being allowed to have a voice within the educational system, helping to choose the curricula, helping to choose the style of management, helping to choose principals and superintendents and teachers at the community level. Parents are being shut out of the process of educational decision making at all levels. That's not good. So I came up with this phrase and I wrote a paper on the topic, and that is bring back the PTA. Bring back the PTA. Parent Teachers Association. Now, when I was teaching elementary school, and that's back in the 60s, I attended PTA meetings. Parents came, teachers came, students came, principals came, superintendent came. We all came together to listen to a speaker on the topic of education and parents and home, and we all had opportunity to know what's going on in the school, and the superintendent, the principal gave a report, and issues were discussed, and parents had opportunity to ask questions and have a discussion. That's PTA. It was held four times a year. Parents had a voice. It was a structured way of doing it. It was an organized way of doing it. It was a humane way of doing it, if you will. And then, in the early 90s, PTA went out the window. We don't have a PTA anymore. Parents got to be working, and it was hard for parents to be part of the school operations and system. They had work to do at night, and it was tough for parents to participate in the school events, so they stopped having them. Bad decision. Error decision. When you stop the process of having a parent have a voice, you create a problem. Then, when the parent needs a voice, they have to break through the system to express their voice. Now, they could have had PTA all these years. They didn't have to stop it at all. Sure, maybe only 15 parents came. Maybe only 50 came. What used to be 100, 150, 200, 300 parents would come. Well, it was just as important to have 50 parents have a voice as it was to have 300 parents have a voice. So we made a mistake there, taking away the opportunity for parents to have a voice through a system that was working well, known as the PTA. So here's what I did, interestingly. I wrote a paper and I sent it to a journalist who is a journalist for a publication system in the area of education. I've heard nothing in return. No response to my letter. Now that means that they don't care about it. They're not in support of teacher and parents having opportunity to talk to each other. I take that as a put down. I take that as a way of saying we're not going to support parent education. We're not going to support ways in which parents can have a voice in the school. So then, secondly, what I did, I took my letter, revised it, and sent it to the local newspaper as a letter to the editor, needing the voice of the parents through PTA, and I labeled it "Bring Back the PTA." It's been now 3 weeks, and my letter to the editor has not been published. Now, I write a lot of letters to the editor, and they often, almost always get published. So it wasn't that somehow they were picking on me. They almost always get published. But this one did not get published. And that's interesting. Does that mean that our local newspaper, which is a liberal newspaper, by the way, is really saying they are not interested in advancing the voice of the parent in the school system? They are not supportive of parents having an opportunity to have a voice or have a system for a voice to be heard. So is our local newspaper, which is a liberal newspaper, more concerned about supporting the teacher than supporting the parent? We'll watch this. You keep an eye on it in your community. You keep an eye on it in your newspapers. You keep an eye on it in your school systems where you live. You participate. You send letters to the editor. You send letters to the superintendent or to the principal or to a teacher. You visit the school. You speak up. You go to any meeting that's held. You become involved in the process of what's going on and see what your experience is. I've had my experience, and I will continue to. And I would encourage you to do the same thing. Parents need a voice. Parents need a system by which their voice can be heard and through which their voice can be heard. We need to have opportunity to work together, and we need to get this school system functioning again. Get it back on track. Get all this other extra garbage out of it. And get back to the basics of learning, and get back to the basics of education, and stop politicizing the classroom and educating our students, our young minds, our young students, to be of a particular political persuasion. We need to stop that. Well, thanks for joining me, and pick up my book, Dr. Teach Me to Parent. You get on Amazon. You get on my website, www.booksbyhedberg.com. So pick it up. It's a great book on parenting, and I have a section in there about parents and teachers working together. In fact, every chapter has a little note as to how parents and teachers can coordinate in raising children together. So I encourage the book, Dr. Teach Me to Parent. Bye for now.